"Go on over there, shovel off that walk for the lady. Told the oldest of the young ones to go get those groceries."
How'd she handle it?
She was kinda stuck, wasn't she? She needed the help, and help was already moving in. I said how it looked like she'd gotten some sun, as it did, I recall. She said she'd taken a little vacation. My boys shoveling her walk, the young ones carting the two bags of groceries up to the little porch, so she stuck and plainly irritated. She said she hated coming back to winter, wished she could spend all her winters in Florida.
She said Florida specifically?
She did. They had sun and palm trees and swimming pools in Florida, and here we had snow and ice and cold. I suppose that's the most she said to me in our whole acquaintance. So I said it was nice she got a holiday, and where in Florida did she go? She just mumbled about having to get inside to her mother and went off. Now, she did stop and offer to pay my grandson, still shoveling, but he wouldn't take any money. He's raised better.
She killed a woman in Tampa, February of 2011.
Well, my sweet Lord. Her vacation tan hadn't yet faded, so this couldn't have been long after. She'd gotten a tan while taking a life and stood over there bitching about the snow. Do you think she went to Florida again after she shot you?
No, I think she went up to Canada. I shot her. She left a blood trail. And she had to move fast.
She had time to kill her own grandparents.
Her fingers reached for her cross again.
Rest their souls.
She hated them like she hated her mother. And she had to be hurting. Why not take it out on them? But she was hurting, and I don't see her trying to drive all the way to Florida with a gunshot wound. Canada's closer. Fresh ID, over the border, dig a hole and hide. She had plenty of cash, we figure, and credit cards under fake IDs. But I think she's in Florida now. She had a good time there.
He glanced back at Letitia.
And I think two of her targets are living there now.
You've got to warn them, Reed. Don't say how the FBI's in charge. Those people should have a chance to take precautions, protect themselves.
After he kissed her goodbye, Letitia watched him drive off. She worried about that boy. The person who wasn't a person but something so bad she didn't have a name for it in her vocabulary had tried to kill him once. Surely he knew she'd try again. She had to pray, and she would, that he was smart enough and good police enough to catch her before she did. Essie looked dumbfounded when Reed offered her a hydrangea.
You should plant it with coffee grounds for reasons that make no sense to me. I'll trade you the plant for a beer.
It's a nice plant. Hank, she called out. Reed brought us a plant.
Dylan and Puck came first on the run.
My man.
Reed slapped high fives with the boy, bent down to rub the wagging dog.
Are we going to the island? Can we go right now?
Gotta hold off on that.
Aw, me and Puck wanna go.
Reed hauled him up.
Not much longer. When you come, I'm making you and Puck the Pug deputies for the day.
With badges?
Can't be a deputy without one. Hey, Hank. Reed, that's a nice hydrangea. Nico Blue. Needs acidic soil to keep it that way. Then I'm passing it to the guy who knows.
He had a beer with Hank, admired Dylan's Power Rangers action figures and dinosaurs. Hank caught the subtle signal between his wife and her former partner.
Hey, Dylan, let's go dig a hole. I've got just the spot.
Another beer? Essie asked after her men went outside to dig.
No, thanks. I've got to catch the ferry back and don't have much time. I stopped by to talk to Letitia Johnson, he began, and relayed the new information.
We always knew she went to Florida, Reed.
That's right, but I think something about it caught her. She talked about it, and she usually made a point of saying next to nothing. She mentioned it, and the woman at the bakery where she used to stop in the mornings, she said Hobart told her she was taking a few days at a health spa in the mountains.
She's a liar, which we already know, too. But you've got a point. She slipped.
She was pissed off, Essie decided. Just back from sun and palm trees, and now she's got snow and cold, and nobody's shoveled the damn walk. Ms. Letitia had her sort of cornered for a minute, so she let go a little. Bitched a little.
Why would it matter, really, what she said to some nosy old woman in her mother's neighborhood? She's irritated with the snow, irritated the kid hadn't shoveled it, fresh off a kill.
Yeah, Essie nodded.
She slipped.
She's in Florida, Essie. I know it.
Reed, we've got no trail leading there.
Two targets and it's been a cold winter.
He pushed up, paced.
What did you think when you saw this house? When you bought it?
Here's home.
Yeah, and I felt the same about mine. She lived with her grandparents and hated them. With her mother before, same thing. She killed them all. Those places were never home for her. I'm betting she thinks Florida is. She comes out of Canada, and even the feds believe she holed up there, and hits Bermuda. You know what I think?
Nodding, Essie puffed out her cheeks. It reminds her she loves sun and palm trees.
Exactly. We figured south already, and I've been leaning toward Florida. Now I'm damn sure of it. I know it's gut, Essie, but it fits.
I can trickle this to the special agent in charge.
Not if it brings heat on you.
Are they getting there? No, they're not. And she's added to the body count. I'll go through channels. Look, Sloop knows you keep in touch with his grandmother and he can verify. You went by to check in on her.
Took her a hydrangea. Planted it.
So much the better. And she hands you this new conversation. You passed it to me, I pass it up the chain. Simple as that.
Okay. As the person who gathered the information and as a chief of police sworn to protect and serve, I'm contacting the two likely targets.
Reed.
It'll take time for the feds to process what you pass up, and even then we can't know what action they might take. I'm contacting them, Essie. What can they do to me?
Maybe not a lot, if anything.
They can't slap at you if I make the contacts.
The contact might have more weight coming from me, a detective on the Portland PD.
Detective? Chief.
He grinned at her.
Come on.
Smartass.
I'm telling you because we've never bullshitted each other, and I don't want you hearing it after the fact. I've gotta go.
He moved to the window first, looked out.
Man, boy, and dog. It's a nice picture.
My favorite. I'm pregnant.
Huh?
He spun around.
Seriously? Why didn't you say so right off? It's good, right?
It's a lot more than good. I'm only about 7.5 weeks, and you're not really supposed to say before you hit 12, but... She looked out the window with troubled eyes. I'm going to have 2 kids. Hank found an agent who's going to shop his book around, and by God, he's already started another. He's happy writing, staying home. I'm happy. Dylan's just full of happy. I want the bitch caught, Reed. Sooner or later, she'll come after me, too. I'm the one who killed her brother.
We're going to get her, Essie.
She doesn't target families. They don't interest her. But now I've got family inside me.
Get the word out. Don't wait for the 12 weeks. Look, I think you're high on her list, no bullshitting between us, so it's too soon for her to come after you. But knowing you're pregnant might hold her back if she's bumped you up.
That's not a bad thought. Because it had tensed up, she rubbed the back of her neck under her short ponytail. I can let it get out. She came after you, and you were the second 911 caller.
The second doesn't matter. I didn't bring the cops. Simone did.
Simone, he added,
who I'm crazy in love with.
You...
Essie managed to get her jaw off the floor.
Now it's my turn.
Seriously? As serious as it gets. It's either you or Simone on the top of her list. No way she's getting to either of you.
Is she in love with you?
I'm working on it. I've got to go.
But it's just getting interesting. How are you working on it?
Come to the island. See for yourself, he said, as she followed him to the door. I can't miss the ferry. I'm the chief of police.
On the ferry, Reed made the calls. He spoke to Max Lowen in Fort Lauderdale, identified himself and said that during a tangential investigation, he'd gathered information that caused him to believe Patricia Hobart might be in Florida. After scaring the crap out of Lowen, Reed spoke of basic precautions, asked relevant questions, gave Lowen his cell number, and suggested he pass that to local law enforcement and contact the SAC at the FBI. He'd be happy to speak with them and verify. With Emily Devlin, he got an answering machine, left his name, number, and asked her to contact him as soon as possible about information on Patricia Hobart. Then he got out of his car, watched the island slide into view. Home, he thought. Where the heart is. He pulled out his phone again, texted Simone.
On the ferry about 5 minutes out. I'm thinking about picking up a pizza and spending some time watching the sunset on the patio with a couple of beautiful women.
She answered back. Cece's making what she calls vegetable soup for the ages, and she roped me into kneading bread dough, so no need for pizza. It's too chilly for sunset on the patio. We'll sit by the fire instead.
Deal. Nearly home.
He slid his phone back in his pocket. He'd try Emily Devlin again in the morning if she didn't give him a call back. But for now, he put it away. Emily heard the phone ring as she closed the kitchen door behind her. She hesitated a moment, nearly went back to answer, then kept going. With her husband and kids already off for a little beach time and pizza, she wouldn't worry about it. If Kent needed her, he'd have called her cell. They had the landline because Kent wanted one for clients and messages, so it had to be a client or another annoying political call or solicitation. Besides, this was her night. Her girls' night out, disguised as a book club, the first and third Sundays of the month. She ran one and just participated in the second. And tonight, she wasn't in charge. She stepped into the garage, one her husband never used, as he had it so packed with sports equipment, tools, and lawn crap it barely had room for her car. She heard a sound, felt a burning flood of pain, then heard and felt nothing. Patricia opened Emily's purse, flipped through her contacts to one of the names on the committee, texted, "Something came up. Explain later. Can't make it. Boo." In the event a neighbor looked out, Patricia adjusted her wig, same style and color as Emily's. She took Emily's keys, slid into the minivan, hit the garage control. She drove through the neighborhood, out again, took a direct route to the open-air shopping center a convenient mile and a half away, and parked. She ditched the wig in her oversized purse with the gun, fluffed up her hair. Screw DNA. She wanted them to know she'd won again. She strolled through the mall, basking in the balmy spring evening. Man, she loved Florida. She window shopped, picked up a couple of things, and walked back to her own car, parked there before she'd taken the mile and a half hike to kill Emily. Her bags were already in the cargo area. She let out a sigh. She hated leaving Florida, wished she could stay and just bask a while. But she had places to go, people to kill.
Road trip,
she said with a laugh. She opened the bag of jalapeno chips, the Diet Pepsi she'd picked up for the drive. Turned the satellite radio up. As she drove away, she decided Emily Devlin had been her easiest kill yet. Her luck was in. Her luck held. Emily's husband didn't check the garage when he got home. He had no reason to. The kids, hyped up from pizza and the ice cream he'd been weak enough to indulge them in after, kept him busy and distracted. He didn't expect his wife home until at least 10 in any case. He let the kids go crazy in the tub because they made him laugh, even if it did mean some serious mopping up before Mom got home. He read them a story, tucked them in, mopped up, got what he considered a very well-earned vodka tonic. He didn't check the machine, never thought of it, and fell asleep in the sixth inning of the baseball game on the bedroom TV. He woke just after midnight, disoriented, then more puzzled than annoyed when he found himself alone in bed. He shut off the TV, went into the bathroom to pee. Yawning, he checked on the kids and peeked into the guest room where Emily sometimes slept when he snored. He went downstairs, called for her. Annoyance flipped over puzzlement. House rule, he thought, for both of them. If you're going to be late, you call. He reached for his phone, remembered he'd stuck it in the charger beside the bed. He went into his office off the living area to use the landline, saw the blinking message light. He tapped for it, frowned. Why the hell was some police chief from an island off of Portland? He heard Hobart's name and felt his blood run cold. He called her cell, felt sick when he heard her cheery voicemail message. Call me. Call me, Emily, right now. He paced back and forth, telling himself she was fine. Just had too many glasses of Pinot, that's all. She was fine. But he went out, checked the pool, the hot tub, took a shaky breath of relief. He didn't even think of the garage or her car for nearly 10 minutes. He wobbled between relieved and shaky when he didn't see her car. Then he found her. Reed didn't get the call from a homicide cop until 3 in the morning. He grabbed the phone, rolled up to sit on what he remembered was Simone's bed instead of his.
Quartermain.
Chief Quartermain? Tranquility Island, Maine?
Yeah, who's this?
Detective Silvio. Coral Gables, PD. I got your name and contact number off a message machine.
Emily Devlin.
He held on to hope for 10 seconds.
Did she contact you?
No, Chief Quartermain.
Are you homicide?
That would be affirmative.
God damn it. God damn it. When?
How? We're working on that. I've got some questions.
Ask them.
He shoved open the door, walked out on the long terrace overlooking the water. He needed air. Simone turned on the lights. She felt that air, a strong, chilly flow of it, rush into the room. She got up, put on a robe, walked to the open door to see Reed standing naked in some fitful moonlight, snapping answers into his phone. He didn't feel the cold, she realized. Not with all that rage burning off him. She'd never seen him angry. Hadn't been sure he ever got there. At least not raging. He didn't rage now, but the rage was in there. She listened because after he snapped out answers, he snapped out questions. Obviously, the answers didn't satisfy him.
Give me a break, detective. Give me a fucking break. She might be alive if I'd made that call sooner, if I'd connected with her. Because it's Hobart, goddammit. She'll have stalked in person, through social media. She'll have a place, or had one, within an easy walk or drive. She'll know Emily Devlin's routine, where she shops, banks, drinks, eats. She'll have documented every last detail. Did Devlin routinely go out on Sunday nights?
Reed shoved at his hair, paced.
For fuck's sake, call the FBI. The sack is Andrew Xavier. But right now you're standing over a dead mother of two. I was there with her in the Down East Mall. I didn't know her, but I was in there too. And I... Jesus fucking Christ, are you trying to be a dick? Then give me TOD and I'll tell you where the fuck I was. I was at the home of my former partner and her family. That's Detective Essie McVee.
He rattled off her phone number and address.
She'll verify. I left her place, drove to the ferry, back to Tranquility. I contacted Emily Devlin, left the message while on the ferry. Prior, I contacted Max Lowen in Fort Lauderdale, as I believed Hobart to be in Florida. The message has a timestamp, goddammit. You know damn well I called her right before or right after TOD.
He listened. And oh yes, Simone could see that rage in every line and muscle of his body.
You do that. Fucking do that. You know where to reach me.
He spun around, and the wild fury on his face had Simone taking a step back. He caught himself.
I need a minute.
But when he reached for the door to close it between them, she stepped forward. Don't do that. Don't shut me out. I heard enough to understand she killed someone else, someone you tried to warn. Come in, Reed. Put some clothes on. You don't know it yet, but you're freezing.
A lot of fucking good it did.
She didn't answer the phone.
Maybe already dead. Too fucking late.
He tossed his phone on the bed, grabbed his pants.
And this homicide asshole's grilling me about why I left the message, why I left the Portland PD, how I know so much, where I was during the time in question. Fucking cocksucker.
He caught himself again.
Sorry, I have to go.
To do what? Put your fist through a wall somewhere else? Once the fucking cocksucker does a minimum of checking, he's going to know he's a fucking cocksucker.
That won't make Emily Devlin any less dead. She had two little kids. I was too late.
She moved to him, wrapped around him.
Damn it, Simone, I was too late. She got by me.
You? She squeezed hard, eased back. Why you and you alone?
I'm the only one she's tried to kill who's looked her in the eyes and lived.
So you're not going to stop? Right now, you don't think that counts for much, but it does. I predict the cop in Florida will call you back, apologize, and ask for your help.
I don't want his fucking apology.
You're probably going to get it anyway. But now, we're going to take a walk on the beach.
It's cold. It's the middle of the damn night. I need to go,
he insisted.
You should go back to bed.
Odd, she thought. He usually held on to his calm. Now that his had slipped, she had a good grip on her own. You're going to wait until I get dressed, then we're going to walk. It's something that helps me, at least sometimes, when I'm really pissed off. Let's see if it helps you. She went to her dresser for a sweatshirt, sweatpants. Seeing you in full-blown rage? I realize just how lucky the island is to have you.
Yeah, nothing like a pissed-off chief of police.
You have a right to be pissed, and still already you're banking it down. And part of the pissed, the part that's still showing, is sad. I knew you were smart and clever as a cop. I knew you respected the job you do and want to do it well. And I knew you cared about people. But tonight I saw just how much you care. She got a scarf, wound it around her neck. We're lucky to have you, Chief. I've got a warm jacket downstairs. We'll get it and yours on the way out.
I'm in love with you. Dear Christ, don't let that scare you off.
It stole her breath for a minute, and she had to take a firmer grip on her calm. It scares me. It's not scaring me off, but I need a little more gathering myself together before I'm sure what we're going to do about it. I've never felt about anyone the way I feel about you. I just need to figure that out.
That works for me. And I'm less pissed off now.
Let's take that walk anyway. You're the first man who's said that to me, I've believed. I think we both need a walk on the beach. It helped. And though he didn't go back in, back to her bed, she knew he'd steadied himself. He kissed her, drove away after he waited for her to go inside. She didn't go back to her bed either. Instead, she made a large cup of coffee, went to her studio. There, she found the sketch of Emily Devlin she'd made from the photo on Reed's board. And gathering her tools, began to do what she could to honor the dead. Part 3. Proof of Life. Life is real. Life is earnest. And the grave is not its goal. Dust thou art, to dust returnest, was not spoken of the soul. Henry Wadsworth Longfellow. Chapter 21. He did get an apology, stiff and obviously on orders, from the Florida detective. And a follow-up call from the detective's lieutenant, who didn't appear to have his head up his ass. They exchanged information and promises for updates as they came. Donna rapped on his door jamb.
We got a call from Ida Booker over on Tidal Lane, and she's fit to be tied.
About what?
Some dog got into her compost bin and dug up her flower bed where her daffodils were just coming up and chased her cat up a tree.
Whose dog is it?
It's nobody's dog. That's the other problem. She's saying it's the second time in 2 days it's treed her cat, and she asked around, having never seen the dog before. The thinking is somebody dumped it. Came over with it on the ferry, went back without it.
Do we have a stray dog problem on the island I don't know about?
We didn't, but it appears we've got one now. Ida says if she sees that dog again, she's going to shoot it in the head. She loves that cat.
We're not going to have anybody shooting a dog.
Then you'd better find it before she does. Her blood's up.
I'll handle it.
He could use the distraction. He drove to Tidal Lane, a pretty neighborhood of 8 permanent homes where the residents took pride in their gardens and had formed a kind of informal commune of craftspeople. Ida, a sturdy woman of 50, wove textiles, had raised 2 sons, and loved her cat.
"He scared Bianca, and God knows what he might have done if she hadn't made it up the tree. And look what he did. Dug up my bulbs, spread my composting all over hell and back, and when I came out, he ran off like a coward."
Reed thought he'd rather deal with a cowardly dog than an aggressive one.
"Did he have a collar?"
"I didn't see one. For all I know, he's rabid."
"Well, we don't know that. Give me a description."
"Some brown mongrel dog, and dirty, fast. First time he came around and chased Bianca, I was right over there, prepping that bed for planting. I stood up, yelled, and he ran off. Same thing today. I heard the barking and carrying on. Bianca likes to nap on the porch. I came out and he lit out."
"Which way?"
She pointed.
"Tail between his legs. He's lucky I didn't have the shotgun."
"Mrs. Booker, I'm going to advise you against getting that gun and firing it."
"My cat, my property."
"Yes, ma'am, but deploying a firearm in a residential area is against the law."
"Self-defense," she said stubbornly.
"Let's see if I can round up the dog. You say he ran off, so he didn't come at you?"
"He went after Bianca."
"I get that, but he wasn't aggressive toward you?"
"Ran the minute he saw me. Coward."
"Not aggressive with people, then?" "Probably." "Okay, I'll look for him. If I don't find him, I'll send a couple of deputies to look around. We'll round him up. Sorry about the daffodils."
He checked the neighborhood, found those who'd spotted the dog, usually after he'd knocked over a trash can and run off. He cruised a while, wondering where he'd go if he were a dog who liked to chase cats and dig up daffodils. It calmed him, he realized, the simple task of searching for a stray dog, crisscrossing that area of the island in his cruiser and on foot. Still, he'd nearly given up and decided to send Cecil out on the hunt when he heard the barking. He spotted the dog on a stretch of beach, chasing birds and the lap of the surf. He got the loop leash and the hamburger he'd stopped for earlier, walked down slow and easy as he considered his quarry. Not rabid to his eye, the way he splashed and ran, and not much more than a puppy. Skinny, ribs showing, so maybe the food would do the trick. He sat, unwrapped the burger, and set half of it beside him. The dog's nose went up, sniffing, then his head turned. The minute he spotted Reed, he froze. Reed sat, waited, let the breeze carry that seductive scent of meat. The dog hunched down, crept closer. Long legs, Reed noted, floppy ears, and yes, tail tucked. The closer the dog got, the lower he got, until he bellied over like a combat trooper. Eyes on Reed, he nipped the burger, ran back to the surf, devoured it. Reed set down the second half, got the loop leash ready. The dog bellied over again, but this time Reed slipped the loop around his neck when he lunged for the meat. The dog tried to pull back, eyes wide and wild.
None of that. You're under arrest, and no biting.
At the voice, the dog froze, then began to tremble.
I'd say somebody gave you a bad time.
Reed picked up the burger, and his movement had the dog hunching and cringing.
A very bad time.
Keeping his movement slow, he offered the rest of the burger. Hunger overcame fear. The tucked tail gave a hesitant wag.
Gotta take you in. Attempted assault on a feline, destruction of personal property. The law's the law.
Slow, slow, Reed laid a hand on the dog's head, skimmed it back and over, felt the bumps of scars at the neck.
I've got some of those myself.
He stroked for a few minutes, was rewarded with a tentative lick on the back of his hand. The dog cringed again when Reed stood up, then shifted his gaze up when the expected blow didn't come. He learned quickly the dog didn't like the leash. He pulled, twisted, froze each time Reed stopped and looked down at him. With that process, they made it to the car. The tail wagged with more enthusiasm.
Like riding in cars, huh? Well, this is your lucky day.
He started to put him in the back, but the dog looked at him with such soulful eyes, the beginning of hope.
Don't barf up the burger in my official vehicle.
The instant he opened the door, the dog leaped in, sat in the passenger's seat, and banged his snout on the window. Reed decided a dog could look surprised. He rolled the window down, and his prisoner's floppy ears waved out in the air all the way back to the station.
Gotta write you up, and see if I can get the vet to come in and take a look at you. Then we'll figure out the rest.
He noted the black SUV in the lot, and knew he had a federal visitor. In the bullpen, Donna took another call, Cecil and Maddie sat at their desks, and Special Agent Xavier sat in a visitor's chair with a cup of coffee while he scrolled something on his phone. The sight and smell and sound of so many humans in one place had the dog shaking, tail tucked, head down.
"Aw, you found the puppy."
Cecil started to get up. Reed held up a hand to stop him.
"He's scared of people."
"Doesn't seem to be scared of you," Maddie pointed out.
"A little yet, but we came to terms over the burger I fed him. Donna, call the vet."
"Vet's only open Wednesdays and Saturdays except for emergencies."
"I know that. Call him at home, tell him the situation. I need him to look over the dog, make sure he's not sick. Cecil, why don't you take him back to the..."
As he held out the leash to his deputy, the dog whined, pressed against Reed's leg, and trembled.
"Never mind. Hang on a minute."
Leading the dog, he went to the break room, hunted up a bowl, a bottle of water.
"Special Agent Xavier," he said as he came back. "Why don't we go into my office?"
"You're bringing the dog?"
"He's in my custody."
In the office, Reed gestured to a chair, then sat behind his desk. Immediately, the dog crawled under the desk. Reed poured water into the bowl, set it down.
"So what can I do for you?"
Reed began over the sound of wet, rapid lapping.
"I felt a face-to-face might make it crystal clear that neither I nor the Bureau appreciate your interference with an active investigation." "Well, you didn't need to take a ferry ride for that, but maybe you needed one to define my interference." "Detective, you contacted two people that we're aware of, related information to one of them that we know of, and stated your personal belief that Patricia Hobart intended to kill them. First off, that's chief. And clearly my personal belief became fact when Hobart killed Emily Devlin."
Xavier pressed his palms together, folded down all but his index fingers.
"We have no evidence at this time that Hobart is responsible for the death of Emily Devlin."
Reed just nodded.
"Would you mind shutting that door? If I get up to do it, this dog's just going to follow me over and back again, and it looks like he's finally settling down."
Reed waited while Xavier obliged.
"I asked you to shut the door because I'd rather my bullpen doesn't hear me calling an FBI agent an asshole."
"You're going to want to be careful, chief."
"Oh, I don't think so. I think what I have to be here is straight. You may not have any physical evidence to date or a handy eyewitness, but you've got everything else. Devlin fits Hobart's pattern down the line. She survived down east, and while she was at it, she saved a life. She got kudos..." "No, my office," he said as Xavier started to interrupt. "She got some kudos at the time, write-ups and so on. More, she benefited financially when the life she saved died of natural causes years later and left Devlin $100,000 in her will. Every one of Hobart's victims so far got press and benefited in some way. You were ordered specifically to stay out of this investigation. I don't work for Portland PD now. I'm not interfering in dick all, and I hope like hell the FBI brings her down and fast. Until you do, I'll do what I do. By tampering with potential targets? Tampering my ass. I contacted Lowen, laid it out for him because I had information that led me to believe Hobart shifted her gears to Florida.
And didn't share that so-called information with officials?
I put together the information Sunday afternoon and fully intended to pass it to you Monday morning.
I did, in fact, advise Lowen to contact you, gave him your name and number. I would have done the same with Devlin had I reached her. And had I reached her, maybe she'd be alive. So don't come into my house, Agent Xavier, and try to bullshit me. You're in charge of the Hobart investigation, but I've got skin in this. Literal skin.
Which is exactly why you were taken off the investigation.
Again, I don't work for Portland PD. I work for the people of and the visitors to this island. And as far as I know, there's no law or regulation saying as such, or as a private citizen, I can't gather information or contact individuals I believe might be in jeopardy.
Xavier just looked down the blade of his nose.
Let me make this clear. The FBI doesn't need the dubious assistance of some obsessed Leo who's playing big shot on some bumfuck island and spends his time out catching stray dogs.
Reed glanced down at the dog now snoring at his feet.
It didn't take that much time. I'll say this, then we should both get back to work. I'm not looking to get in your way, and we both know I haven't been in your way. You're pissed because it's now in the files that some obsessed Leo on some bumfuck island contacted Hobart's next victim, or tried to. And you, Special Agent, with all the punch of the FBI behind you, didn't. I'd be pissed too in your shoes. But Emily Devlin is still dead, and there are people I care about who fit Hobart's victim pattern. So you're wasting your time trying to scare or intimidate me.
What I'm doing is warning you. The Bureau has control of this investigation.
Warning me isn't going to do dick all either. I hope you get her. I hope to Christ you take her down before she kills the next on her list. When you do, I'll send you a case of the beverage of your choice. Until then, I'd say we both know where we stand on this.
You'll cross a line. Xavier got to his feet. When you do, I'll see to it you lose this cushy job you've got here and any chance at a badge anywhere.
I'll keep that in mind. You know, you haven't asked how I determined Hobart was in Florida and would go for one of the two people I contacted. You don't ask, Reed continued, because you're pissed. I'm going to send you that information, and I hope you'll look into it when you're not as pissed. It's relevant because if you haven't confirmed that Hobart's responsible for Devlin as yet, you will. She'll have left something because she wants credit for it.
Just keep out of my way.
We're still off-season, Reed said as Xavier went to the door. So you've got a couple hours before the next ferry back to Portland. The coffee and pie are damn good at the Sunrise Cafe.
Xavier strode out, leaving the door swinging open behind him. Reed looked down at the snoring dog again.
That, my friend, was a man who managed to be a dick and a tight ass simultaneously.
He looked up again when Donna came to the door.
Your visitor didn't look too happy when he left. Rude, too, slamming the door. We figured you were in trouble with the feds for something, but you don't look worried.
I'm not, because I'm an obsessed Leo playing big shot on a bumfuck island. And that works out pretty well for me.
Big shot, she snorted.
Hey, I'm chief of police. That's pretty big for any shot.
Did he really call the island bumfuck?
He did, but we're not worried about that because we know better.
Did you cut that asshole down to size?
He didn't leave happy, did he?
She gave a sharp nod of approval.
Doc Dorsey said you can bring the dog in.
Reed wondered if he should let sleeping dogs lie. But when he rolled back a couple of inches in his chair, the dog's head shot up. His eyes stared into Reed's with fear and longing.
I guess I'll do that, then.
He opted to walk, hoping the dog would stop shaking every time he saw someone who wasn't his arresting officer. But every time he did, the dog leaned on Reed's leg and trembled. The vet had his office attached to his house, less than a quarter mile out of the village proper. He lived in the bright yellow house with his wife and their youngest son, now a high school senior. Doc Dorsey, even his wife called him Doc, kept regular hours 2 days a week, with a third morning reserved for surgeries. He'd open otherwise for emergencies, even if he was out fishing or working with his three hives of bees. When Reed walked in, the vet's wife sat at the desk in the waiting area. A kind of animal parlor, Reed observed, with a scatter of mismatched chairs and tables on a floor of pale blue vinyl.
Mrs. Dorsey, I appreciate you opening up for me.
Oh, that's no problem. She waved that away, a woman with a long brown ponytail pulled back from a pretty, fully made-up face. So this is our stray. Poor lost baby. She hopped up. The dog cringed back and hunched behind Reed's legs.
People spook him.
You don't.
Well, I gave him a hamburger and a ride in the cruiser.
He's bonded with you. She flicked a finger at Reed, then crouched down to dog level. I bet he was hungry. He's definitely underweight. That's a sweet face he has. He needs a good wash. I think there's some red under that brown, but he's one dirty dog. Did you bring a stool sample?
We haven't gotten to that end of things.
Well, we'll need one. You take him around the back. Plenty of dogs have pooped and peed there. The scent could get him going. How long ago did he have that hamburger?
A good hour, I guess.
Then you should have some luck. Take this. She pulled a doctor's glove and a wide-mouthed plastic bottle out of a drawer. I'll let Doc know you're here. Resigned, Reed went out, but before he could lead the dog around to the back, said dog squatted and did what dogs do right on the concrete walkway.
Well, shit. Literally.
Reed put on the glove, did what he had to do. That was quick, Mrs. Dorsey said when he came back in.
He went on the walkway before I realized. Sorry.
He handed her the sample, which he swore moved.
I got most of it.
Don't worry, it's not the first time. Take him on back. Straight back through the doorway, first left. She handed the sample back. You're going to give this to Doc, but I can tell you that poor baby's got intestinal worms.
Fun.
He went back to the exam room with its counters, long raised padded table, scales. The dog trembled again when he saw Doc. The vet had a long brown ponytail like his wife, but gray streaked through his. He wore John Lennon glasses, a beatific smile, a Grateful Dead t-shirt, cargo jeans, and Doc Martens boots.
Now, who've we got here?
He won't give me his name, but I've got this.
Reed happily handed over the sample. Doc said,
mm-hmm,
and like his wife, crouched down.
Hasn't been getting regular meals for a while by the looks of it. Scared of people, is he?
Shakes a lot. I felt scars on the back of his neck.
That beautiful smile vanished, and the eyes behind the glasses went hard.
We'll have a look. He's not full grown, I'd say. See if you can get him to stand on the scale.
It took a little convincing, but if Reed knelt down beside him, the dog stood still and trembled. Doc noted the weight, told Reed to lift him up on the table.
You stand in front of him so he can see you, and you talk to him. Just keep your voice calm. Nobody's going to hurt you, but we've got to have a look.
He kept looking at the dog, talking in that same quiet voice, while Doc gently ran hands over him.
People reported a stray just yesterday. He chased Ida Booker's cat up a tree, yesterday and again this morning. Dug in her garden, ran off when he saw her. I found him chasing birds on the beach down that way. Lured him in with a burger. I had to sit for a while first.
As he spoke in the calm, easy voice he'd use for an assault victim, he kept his eyes on the dog's eyes.
He liked riding in the car. Kept his head out the whole time. He seems okay with me, but he spooks around anybody else, so far. If you move too fast or raise up your arm, he jerks down. Classic signs of abuse. I know it. It's pretty much the same in people. These scars? They're probably from a choke collar. Yanking and yanking on it until the metal cut him. Motherfucker. Sorry. No sorry. It takes a motherfucker to do that to an animal. I need a look at his teeth, his ears, and so on.
Reed kept talking. The dog shook harder, but with Reed holding him, Doc examined his teeth, eyes, ears.
He's got infections in both ears. Teeth are good. I'm going to estimate he's between 8 and 9 months old, which means you double the motherfucker.
Doc pulled a couple of dog treats out of his pocket. He put the first on the table, waited for the dog to track his gaze from treat to read to treat, then gobble it. The next he held out. The dog looked at Reed again.
Tell him it's okay.
Don't be an idiot, Reed told the dog. Somebody offers you a cookie, you take it.
The dog did, eyed Doc.
I can do a test to see if he's had his shots. I'm betting against. He's still got his balls, too, and that needs to change. I'm going to take a look at the sample, so just keep him on the table.
Doc went into a little alcove.
We can keep him, Doc said. Treat him here, but you're his person. If you can handle it, he'd do better with you until he's healthy. Whoever owned this dog can't have him back. If you find who did, they need to be charged with abuse and neglect.
Since I'm not home all day, shouldn't...
The dog licked the back of Reed's hand, looked up at him with that same combination of longing and fear.
We'll take it one day at a time.
He's got worms. I'm going to give you medicine for that, and we'll need a follow-up stool sample. I'll give you an ointment for the ears and an antibiotic. We'll write up instructions. I'd recommend you feed him a good puppy brand, 3 times a day until he hits his normal weight. I need to draw some blood from him, so keep him distracted.
Reed kept them both distracted. He'd rather face a fist than a needle.
What do you think he is? I mean, what kind of dog?
I think there's some coonhound in there.
Doc pinched some skin on the dog's flank, slid the needle in.
Might be some lab and a lot more of this and that. He's not full grown. I'm going to give you some shampoo. He's got some fleas and that'll take care of them. You need a bath, boy.
Doc came around, stroking the dog. The dog didn't shake as much, but he watched Doc as if waiting for the gentle hand to turn mean.
Somebody did a number on him, Doc said. In time, with patience and good care, he may get over it. Some do, some don't. I'm going to put the medicine together for you, and Susanna will print out instructions for all of it. Should we bill the island PD?
Reed thought of the budget.
No, go ahead and bill me.
Back came the smile.
In that case, I'm going to charge you cost for the medicine, and we're going to consider the exam a public service.
I appreciate that. A lot.
Doc offered the dog another treat. The dog just looked at Reed, judged it aloud, and took it.
If you can't keep him, we'll find a home for him. Right now, he trusts you, and he's had enough trauma in his short life.
Susanna, as they had progressed to first names, added a list of items he needed for basic puppy care, and walked him through the first application of ointment, gave him a little bag of treats and what she called pill pockets in a variety of flavors. He walked back to the station with the dog and the bag from the vet.
Cecil and Maddie just headed to the high school. A little dust-up, just off school grounds. A couple of boys punching each other, probably over a girl.
Donna?
Her eyes narrowed at his tone.
Chief?
I know the rule about no personal errands, but I can't take this dog into the market, and right now he's stuck to me like Velcro. Susanna Dorsey gave me a list of what I need to get for him.
You expect me to leave my post, go down to the market, and buy stuff for a stray dog?
He's got scars on the back of his neck, from somebody yanking him on a choke chain so hard and so often it cut him. He's got infections in both ears and is stuck to me because everybody else in his life so far has hurt him. Doc says he's only about 8 months old.
Her chin pushed up so high her bottom lip almost disappeared.
Doc said that about the choke chain?
Yeah.
Give me the damn list.
Thanks. Sincerely.
I'm not running a personal errand for you. I'm running one for that dog. Now give me your credit card, as you don't know how much this is going to cost.
He handed it over, decided he'd think of his own budget later. When he finally locked the station for the night, he decided to give himself and the dog a break and drove home in the cruiser.
You're on parole,
Reed told him as he led the dog into the house.
Crapping and pissing in the house, chewing on anything but what I give you, violates the terms of your parole.
Take that seriously.
The dog sniffed around a little in the bedroom, always with one eye cocked at Reed, as Reed changed into his most ragged sweatpants, an old sweatshirt, and a pair of sneakers he hadn't gotten around to tossing out. Because of the two of them, Reed knew that what came next would be messy. He led the dog back outside, got the hose, the shampoo, and spent the first 10 minutes of the project wrestling a wet dog who whined and shook and tried to escape the nightmare of soap and water. The dog finally submitted, just staring at Reed with eyes that spoke of the pain of betrayal. They were both soaked and not particularly happy with each other when Simone drove up.
Better keep back. We're a mess.
Susanna Dorsey told Hildy, who told Cece, you'd taken in a stray dog. I see the grapevine rings true yet again.
He's on parole.
Reed ruthlessly ran the hose over the dog to wash off the shampoo and dead fleas.
And right now, skirting close to the edge.
He has a sweet face.
Yeah, everybody says so. He's also flea-bitten and has worms.
Abused, Susanna said.
Yeah, that too.
Simone walked over to sit on the steps because the dog watched her as if she might throw a rock at his head. I'm supposed to take a picture of him and text it to Cece.
You should wait until he's more presentable.
He's a pretty color. Sort of like a chestnut horse.
Apparently he's got some coonhound in him, whatever that is.
Do you like dogs?
Sure. We had one when I was a kid. My sister named it Frisky before my brother and I could veto. She was a good dog. We lost her right before I left for college.
He glanced over.
How about you?
We couldn't have a dog or cat. My mother's allergic. Or says she is. I never really believed her. But yes, I like dogs. Are you keeping him?
I don't know. I'm not here most of the time. Doc said they'd find him a home. He'd probably be better off once he gets used to being around people who don't smack him around.
He let go of the dog to grab one of the old towels he hadn't gotten around to tossing out, and the dog used the opportunity to shake off the water. It flew up, out, and all over Reed. At Simone's laugh, Reed used the towel on his own face.
Now I need a damn shower.
Looks like you just got one.
Har.
He began rubbing the dog briskly with the towel.
How do you like that?
The dog responded by wagging its tail and licking Reed's face.
Sure, sure, now we're buddies.
Simone watched the man rub the dog and grin, while the dog wagged and licked his face. Though she knew she'd been slipping and sliding, in that moment, with that image, she fell in love. Chapter 22. When Patricia decided she wanted to document her story, professionally, only one person fit the bill. And really, Selena McMullen had been right there at the Down East, had ridden the wave of the videos she'd taken of that idiot Paulson. Who better? Besides, Patricia felt Selena had treated her with some respect when she'd done that anniversary interview. She even liked the way she'd looked and sounded. Though, of course, she'd put on that poor, shy, sad me face. This would be different. This would be real. And when this hit cable and the internet, people would finally know who had the damn brains, who had some damn grievances. Patricia even wrote up a kind of script and practiced. In doing so, she was so impressed by her own skills, she decided that when she settled down to the good life in Florida, she'd write a screenplay on her life and times. When she had it set, when she had everything in place, when she believed everything was perfect, she made contact.
This is Selena.
Don't hang up, Patricia whispered in a shaky voice. Don't call the police.
Who is this?
Please, I have to talk to somebody. I'm so scared.
If you want to talk to me, I need a name.
It's Patricia. Patricia Hobart. Please don't call the police.
Patricia Hobart?
Doubt dripped.
Prove it.
You came into the... You called it the green room? Before they took me out for the anniversary report last July. You sat with me and you said if I ever remembered anything about my brother,
Any little thing I hadn't told the police, I should call this number. I could tell you.
I'm here for you, Patricia. Now excitement rang clear. I'm glad you called me. Patricia heard the rustling, imagined McMullen grabbing a recorder, a notebook, and smiled.
I don't know what to do.
Tell me where you are. The FBI's looking for you, and a lot of cops.
It's not like they say, none of it, none of it. I don't know what's happening, I don't understand. I've been running, but I'm scared all the time. I'm going to turn myself in, but I need to talk to somebody first. I need to talk to somebody who'll listen and tell the truth.
She added broken sobs.
You don't know. You don't know what they did to me.
Who?
My grandparents. Oh, God, I need to tell someone. I can't keep running, but nobody will believe me.
You can tell me. I believe you. What did they do to you?
No, no, not like this. In person. I need you to record everything so it's, like, on the record. You can't tell anyone or they'll kill me. I know it. Maybe I should just kill myself and end it.
You don't want to do that, Patricia. You need to tell your story. I'll help you.
Patricia smiled, let her voice quaver with hope.
You'll help me?
I will. Why don't you tell me where you are?
You'll call the police.
No, I won't. You said you're turning yourself in. But you want to tell your story first. You want me to make sure people hear your story. I won't call the police.
A weak voice, Patricia thought, with just a touch of desperate hope.
You swear?
Patricia, I'm a journalist. I only want the truth. I only want your story. I'd never betray you. In fact, when you're ready, I know a lawyer who'll help you. We'll arrange for you to turn yourself in so no one hurts you.
Patricia studied the flask of scotch she'd sipped while McMullen spoke.
You'd do that?
Tell me where you are and I'll come meet you. We'll talk.
If you tell the police and they come, I'll kill myself. I have pills.
Don't take any pills. I won't do that. Where are you? I'll come now.
Right now?
Yes, right now.
I'm at the Traveler's Best Motel off Route 98, right before the Portland exit. Please help me, Ms. McMullen. There's no one else.
You sit tight, Patricia. I can be there in 40 minutes.
Someone has to listen,
Patricia sobbed again.
You're the only one.
She hung up, toasted herself in the mirror with the scotch she'd developed a taste for. Selena raced to change into an on-camera suit. If things went well, she'd have the crazy woman in her studio inside 2 hours. The biggest exclusive anywhere, and it fell in her lap. Once she had that in the pipe, she'd call the FBI. First, the mother of all exclusives. Then she'd rake it in as the intrepid reporter who brought down Patricia Jane Hobart. She checked the time as she grabbed her laptop. She'd start with digital remote. Nearly midnight. She'd beat that 40 minutes if she pushed it. She packed up her recorder in case Patricia was initially shy. A still camera, her phone, tossed in a makeup bag, checked her Glock with its hot pink frame, and was in her garage in 5 minutes flat. Emily Devlin could have warned her about Patricia's skill with garage doors, but dead women don't talk. Selena slid behind the wheel. Her eyes widened in the rearview mirror when Patricia sat up in the back seat. Even as she grabbed for her purse and the gun, the syringe jabbed into her neck.
Night-night,
Patricia said. When Selena slumped, Patricia got out, popped the trunk. She hauled Selena out, fixed plastic restraints on her wrists and ankles, added a gag just in case Selena came out of the sedative and made a fuss. With some effort, she dragged her to the trunk, hoisted her up, and rolled her inside.
You just take a nice nap, Patricia told her. We've got a long drive ahead of us.
She closed the trunk. Simone didn't tell him. She wasn't ready. And in any case, the moment didn't seem right for declarations of love.
She knew he'd keep the dog. If he wasn't already in love, he was, as she'd been, slipping and sliding in that direction. Because he'd done a very good deed for the day, she did one of her own and fixed a simple pasta dinner. She didn't mention she'd learned how to make it from a certain